everyone. This is Peter Grandich on Tuesday, September 2nd at 6 a.m. This is not to be considered investment advice. You should always speak to a licensed financial advisor before making any investment decision and to read all my disclosures. As always, the primary reason for this communication is for clients of our financial planning group to be aware of my latest economic and financial market observations. Others are welcome to hear it too, but again, this is in no way any type of advisory service. According to my most recent blog post, starting September 2nd, a much more intense focus and commitment is now imperative. Having spent the entire year up until a couple of weeks ago, believing the U.S. stock market would end up the year basically flat, a far more concerning view has taken hold that strongly suggests the stock market is now vulnerable to a sharp sell-off or even a crash. The next logical question is how to prepare for this possibility. Clients should know how much I can't stand the financial services industry cookie-cutter approach to one-size-fits-all for portfolios. No two individual investors are identical, and even married couples often exhibit distinct differences in their investment approaches. So there's no one way to go about this, but I do think there's a common theme all can share, and that's the belief that capital preservation now comes before capital appreciation. It's not how much one can make that is key now, but how much one doesn't lose. That should separate the winners from the losers. One's age, income, family and business requirements, and personal legacy wishes all make this an individual decision. But hopefully that's been made a whole lot easier for clients because all that was already concluded when we set up your alternative to traditional financial planning process. Another general principle is that having fewer years to recover from potential losses may warrant a much more conservative approach moving forward. For individuals who have followed these recommendations in recent years, this process may be simpler and possibly already been established due to have taken an alternative approach compared to many investors and professional advisors. Nowhere has that proven more fruitful than choosing gold over both stocks and bonds. Let's cut to the chase. The truth has the potential to provide clarity, particularly for those who have gained advantages from it, even if they may not be well received by everyone. The don't worry, be happy crowd that makes up much of the financial industry, along with most certainly much of the so-called mainstream financial TV networks and the financial media in general, who are tied to the hips of Wall Street, all don't want to speak the truth that blows up, ironically, their gold mine. I'm speaking to the fact, to them, gold is like kryptonite and investors should stay away from it. Imagine this, the average portfolio held in America may have less than 1% exposure to gold and up to 99% exposure to general equities and bonds. Yet there are cold hard facts that should cause most individual investors to fire their financial advisor. Gold is up 1,132% since the new millennium began. General equities during that time just 334%. Most financial advisors were either not born or in diapers when I first started working on Wall Street in 1984. They have also just been in the business since the millennium started, the majority, yet they have shown little or no interest in gold, despite it doing almost 250% better than general equities since the millennium began. Back at the end of 2021, yours truly stepped out big time by daring to suggest selling all general equities and treasury bonds and buying just physical gold. I ended up like the Maytag repairman, very alone in such a thought. But here too, gold demonstrated its superiority by rising 92% since then, while general equities less than half of that at just 41%. Meanwhile, the Bloomberg 10-year plus treasury index had fallen 7.29% since then, disappointing investors who followed these always optimistic advisors and were led to believe bonds simply don't lose money. 2025 has seen more of the same, with gold up 34%, while the market they speak almost exclusively about on those financial networks with their talking heads from Wall Street, their only real guest, is just up about 8% and bonds doing about the same. And excuse me while I take a little self-pat on the back now, especially when there's a few keyboard warriors who go all over cyberspace to talk about the very few poor choices of mine, but always seem to fail to point out the overwhelming correct decisions that also included, which gave far superior returns. I suggested gold mining stocks over physical gold many months ago, and they have been printing money with dramatic record free cash flow and greatly outperforming physical gold. Finally, for those who could truly, mentally and financially afford to lose part or all their capital, I truly backed up my own truck on junior resource stocks, who just this past month alone saw an average 20% gain. So, for those who listened, you're in a far superior position to deal with what may or may not occur going forward. But in an environment where what you've done for me lately is the way of the world, here's how I see things going forward. But please, like I've said for decades, those of us who look into a crystal ball for a living, we only end up experts on how to eat a lot of broken glass. With all that in mind, here's my best 41 plus year experience guess on what plays out going forward. First and foremost, I, along with some others, believe we're in the mother of all bubbles, and we're already seeing some leakage that can lead to a major bubble burst going forward. Like a bottle rocket, this can still go somewhat higher and longer than average, but make no mistake about it, it can and will pop and come falling back to earth. The list of bearish factors has grown by leaps and bounds, but let me just discuss a few of them right now. Current market valuations now exceed a height last seen in 1929. This dwarfs the 2000 tech bubble and the 2008 housing bubble. The S&P 100 currently has 27% of its total value in stocks having price-to-earning ratios exceeding 50 times earnings. 66 of those stocks in the S&P 100 have a P/E higher than 30. There's only one stock with a P/E below 10. The U.S. debt crisis just keeps getting worse. The U.S. budget deficit hit $291 billion in July alone, the second biggest for that month ever. After 10 months of fiscal year 2025, the budget gap reached a mind-blowing $1.63 trillion, the third largest deficit in history. Don't you remember just a few months ago when the stock market was raving why it was so bullish to be in stocks? Because Musk and Trump were going to not only eliminate the deficit, but they were going to pay down the debt through Doge. Where did that go? The S&P 500 price-to-book value ratio hit a record 5.3 times. The ratio has now officially surpassed the 2000 dot-com bubble peak. For perspective, the long-term average has been only 2.0. The employment sham that carried over from the Biden administration that Trump had no issue with in his first 5 months because he was able to tout how strong his economy was doing, has had the curtain pulled and now shows there was just a wizard behind it pulling strings that Trump now wants to replace with his own wizard. The BLS is set to revise down U.S. job numbers somewhere between 550,000 to 950,000 for 12 months ending March 2025, according to Goldman Sachs, and that comes out on September 9th. If true, that'll be the biggest 12-month downward revision in 15 years. Total cuts over 2 years would reach 1.5 million. And as I have argued with others, the employment picture was far weaker than we were led to believe. U.S. consumer sentiment is at crisis levels. The University of Michigan consumer sentiment fell to 58.6 in August, one of the lowest readings this century. This is in line with the last financial crisis level and also the 1980s recession onsets. The geometric average of four long-term valuation metrics for the S&P 500 has hit 163%, an all-time high. This is more than 3 standard deviations above the mean. The 2000 dot-com bubble peaked at just 126%. Retail investors have been net buyers of U.S. equities in 16 of the last 18 weeks. They have been net buyers of equity options for 16 straight weeks, one of the longest streaks in 8 years. Meanwhile, corporate insiders and large institutions have been aggressive sellers. The public has outsmarted insiders and large players a total of 0 times in my 41 years. But hey, this time it can be different. Not. The biggest bubble is not just in the equity market. Things like cryptocurrencies, especially memecoins, are the pet rocks of the 21st century. I recently spent a great deal of time speaking about Trump's desire to see retirement accounts buying private equity and cryptocurrencies, and that if it does come to bear, it would be the worst economic investment decision in the modern era. But this is all part of the biggest bubble of all time. Now, I couldn't end speaking without touching on one of what I believe, if it hasn't proved yet to be, it will in the next 12 to 24 months, one of the best decisions in my career, and that was recognizing not only de-dollarization and its impact, but what the BRICS were going to mean to it, world trade, and the decline of U.S. on the world stage in general. Trump's tariff war may be draining global trade, but it's also forging an unlikely alliance, India, China, and Russia. The elephant, the dragon, and the bear are converging, pooling energy, manufacturing, and markets into a new power axis. Beyond oil and defense, it's a challenge to dollar dominance that I and others believe is rewriting global trade. As good as Trump has been on some issues like immigration and lawlessness, his carrying a big stick and using lapdogs like Lutnick instead of an olive branch will be far more damaging than any of the good things he has brought to bear so far. As the foundations that once underpinned economic stability seem increasingly fragile, many seasoned observers are left questioning whether the traditional measures of market health still hold any meaning. Volatility is no longer the exception, but the rule, as asset valuations detach from historic norms and speculative fever eclipses sober analysis. Yet, among this turbulence, a pattern emerges, one where long-standing cycles of optimism and denial repeat with uncanny regularity. Investors, swept along by narratives of innovation, and this time it's different, are drawn into ever riskier bets. The disconnect between Main Street reality and Wall Street exuberance grows wider, fed by algorithmic trading, social media hype, and a persistent appetite for the extraordinary. Looking ahead, the consequences of these imbalances may reverberate far beyond financial statements and quarterly reports. Structural shifts in global power, as signaled by the BRICS growth and the decline of dollar dominance, reshape the map of international commerce. Policy responses, both reactive and preemptive, will inevitably lag behind the pace of change, leaving markets exposed to shocks that no model can fully protect. In such an environment, prudence becomes more than a virtue, it's a necessity. The lessons of past crises echo the importance of diversification, the value of skepticism, and the need to recognize when euphoria has outpaced reality. The next chapter in this unfolding saga will be written not only in numbers, but in the choices investors and policymakers make as they navigate uncharted terrain. Never has it been more wiser to be a live chicken versus a dead duck until further notice. And let me close by saying it is imperative more than ever to follow me on my X page, as markets are not only volatile, but moving dramatically fast, and taking the time to make blog posts or videos could see us window of opportunity close faster than we've ever imagined. Please now have a most blessed rest of your day.